Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, Dre, you got live.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is...
What? My name is...
Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
Oh, yeah, America.
I gotta switch up right now again, make y'all think, is he still coming?
He thought you were pulling the Dre, man.
Yeah,
pulling the rock.
Yeah, there you go.
But you know, the last one that happened to was Dre, so it's actually pulling the Dre.
No, it's not. Here we go.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I can't argue with about that.
Yeah.
You know.
You were the last one, dude.
y'all try to crush my high, but I see it ain't gonna work. Oh man.
Here we go.
Sports with 12 there. January 25th.
You need to stay off that marijuana, dude.
Hey, man, I'm just saying. I got to say, you know, Pac-Man Jones moved close to you, bro. He's in your backyard. Everywhere you go, Pac-Man goes. That's all I'm going to say. And you know about Pac-Man Jones. Anyway, for those who didn't know, we are Christian Talkers for 12 minutes. Hey. We're hearing a lot of voices. And as you always know, we like to introduce the crew. I am your boy, Andre, joined by my fellow co-host, Mr. JQ, even though he got in by the nick of his skinny, the chinny chin chin. How you feeling this evening, sir?
Hey, man, listen, I told like Rob, you know, I'm coming around. As long as I get my hand in a home plate before the tag is down, I mean, I'm safe, right? That means I got here before the show started.
Fair enough. You're trying to make it sweat. It's all good. And the other gentleman that you hear is Mr. Robert Ford. How you feeling this evening, Rob?
Oh, wow.
He's
he
doing great, man.
You know, you
got to get some little fresh fish when you get back to the Big Easy, right? You have some bronze trout, man.
Ooh-wee.
Ooh. Yeah, you know we got to get the food update.
Oh, my goodness.
Sports.
Here we go. So for those who didn't know, we are ready to get this party started, and we're going to talk a lot of sports. But first, let me give you a couple of numbers, all that pertinent information. You want to reach out to your boys. Shout out to my man, Alex. Alex, he's joining in. He's my Overwatch guy, too. So hopefully you're listening in, bro. A lot of love for you, man. We're wrecking on that, too. So hold on a conversation. But so we do. If you want to reach out to your boys, the number to call into the show, it's always 424-243-9519. Once again, 424-243-9519. We're on Twitter. If you go to the number 12, THMAN Sports, you'll find us in that arena. And then last but not least, you'll find us if you go to Facebook.com, you do 12th Man Sports, or if you type in Talking Sports, 12th Man, hopefully you'll find us in that arena as well. So, gentlemen, we got a lot of things to talk about, a lot of recap. And first and foremost, we're going to talk about some championship here that just passed here. And we're going to kick it off.
Oh.
And I think, I don't know if Ben Roethlisberger is trying to steal my thunder as a Falcon fan, but he's over here talking about you know, he's uncertain about playing in 2017. I think where there's smoke, there's fire. So I'm going to kick it off with you, JQ. I know how you love the Steelers. So your thoughts about this and what you think is going with this, man.
Just in case, to our first-time listeners, tell them what your nickname for Pittsburgh is, JQ.
Please no.
Pittsburgh. Yes, sir. Absolutely. But,
oh,
you know,
gosh.
I think
Andre,
I,
man, you ain't had the button ready?
That's what I'm saying. It's a free country for now. So carry on, bro. Finish your thoughts.
Well, you know, honestly, and Mike Tomlin talked about it, that he's heard Ben make those kind of comments before. I think that was just a tough loss for Ben, knowing, you know, the history of him not having success against Brady, especially in Foxborough, and the things that led up to it with AB and then Le'Veon getting hurt. I think that was just frustration. Sometimes it's best not to necessarily talk about it when the wounds are that, you know, that deep and they're freshly cut, you know, so to speak. So I don't really put a lot of credence into what he just said. I think he's got some things he's mad at. I think he's mad at Mike Tomlin for not necessarily putting AB in his place before then, where you get a Facebook Live thing kind of happen. I think he's mad at Haley because you think about that offense that we talked about was so powerful, and all they've really been doing is kicking field goals over the past game and a half. And he's mad at Antonio Brown for bringing that kind of distraction to the team where, you know, it's got to be a, you know, we the Steelers, we've been here before. Why are you bringing us down to levels of teams who act like they've never been here before with these kind of distractions and making it about you as opposed to making it about us? And last week I thought it was going to be something that was, you know, brushed under the rug because they know who AB is and that's who he's been, really. But given what I heard Ben say, I think there's been some, to your point, of smoke where there's fire. I think he's gotten a little bit kind of pissed with AB and what he's had happening, going more into that cold diva kind of personality. And he just wants him, you know, to lay some of them play ball, so to speak. So I think that's more of a threat from Ben. Like, you know, if y'all don't get y'all ish together, I'm going to walk away. And then where are you going to be then? And if he says something like that, then everybody around is going to be like, ooh, ooh, wait, wait. We can all say what we want to say, and we can talk big and bad. But if we don't got Ben back there, we don't got no shot. So we might want to listen to what he got to say and kind of go to what he's talking about. So I think that's more of him using more of it as leverage as opposed to really going to retire.
Rob?
I totally agree. I think the Roethlisberger was just talking out of frustration. There's no doubt in my mind he'll be playing football next season. He's in the heart of his prime. I mean, I know he's won two Super Bowls and he's accomplished a lot in the game, but I think he's still hungry for more success. The team came so close, and, you know, obviously early in the season he didn't have Bell. And he had some injuries in the midseason. They could have possibly had a better record this season and possibly in contention for home field advantage this season if some things would have, you know, broke their way properly. So I think he's going to be hungry going into the next season. He's just speaking out of frustration. He'll definitely be back. He's in the prime, you know, quarterbacks, good quarterbacks these days are knocking on 40. So he's got a lot of football left in him.
Very good analysis, you two. And I'm going to piggyback on that, too. And, JQ, for somebody
that
hates
don't want to hear that,
Pittsburgh, yeah, but for somebody that hates Pittsburgh,
no, we don't.
JQ, you seem to have the temperature of what's happening right there, too. So I think that's exactly correct. I don't know if you guys happen to see the Football Life about Troy Aikman. Pretty interesting if you guys did not see that. So there's a part where he's talking about right whenever the last couple years, whenever they won the last couple Super Bowls, and then Jerry Jones gets rid of Jimmy Johnson, and then Barry Switzer comes in. And he was talking about how he was always playing the bad cop. And him and Jimmy Johnson, they kind of switch roles, like good cop, bad cop. And, you know, so that's it's a way to kind of get the team, like, focused. And then if the quarterback is saying that all the time, it didn't come out correctly. And he was like, that's what kind of helped – not helped, but that's kind of hastened his retirement from the game. So I think this is very similar to – not that Ben Roethlisberger is going to retire – but you have to have somebody that be able to play the bad cop, and you kind of have to kind of flip roles because right now, as you mentioned, JQ, Antonio Brown, you know, there's no way in Hades you're going to be sitting there Facebook Live-ing, bro. He should have been put in this place. I mean, I don't care how talented that joker is. You know, you'd be like, yo, you know, that was a huge distraction. You're going into the freaking Patriots game. Yep. You shouldn't be, like, Facebook Live-ing. You know, and then, like you said, frustration of the offense. The offense hasn't been performing that well. Even versus Kansas City, they barely got through that game, and then you know the game plan was kind of messed up for the Patriots. So there's a couple things that are happening, and you know, obviously Ben is going to, you know, obviously frustrate. He's very frustrated. So like you said, all of these things kind of happened, and it's going to definitely wake up the Steelers. And, you know, like I said, this is the first time. And obviously I'm going for Mike Tomlin, but there's got to be some massive changes that are going to happen for them to kind of get back too. So I know we've talked enough about the Steelers, according to JQ. So let's move on to the next topic here, and we're gonna talk about this here. We're gonna talk about the top five Super Bowl teams of all time. I'm sure this is Rob's topic here. So Rob, go ahead and give us your thoughts about this, man.
All right, I'm probably surprising to most. But my number one Super Bowl team of all time is the 1991 Redskins led by Joe Gibbs. This team was so close to being undefeated. They lost a meaningless Week 17 game that kept them from being undefeated. This team was led by Mark Rypien. They beat all their teams in the playoffs 102-27. None of the games were close. Rypien was sacked only 7 times the entire season. The offensive line was one of the best in the league. They Hogs. Sacked the opposing quarterback 50 times.
The Hogs.
Yeah. So, I mean, for go a whole season, he only gets sacked 7 times. It was unbelievable. To me, that's the greatest Super Bowl team of all time. Number two, let's go with the 1989 49ers, led by George Seifert. Obviously, the top two wide receivers combined for 27 touchdowns. The team only lost 2 games by a total of 5 points for the season. And they beat a future Hall of Fame quarterback in the Super Bowl by the name of John Elway 55-10. Joe Montana, the game was so out of reach in the fourth quarter, Joe Montana only threw 3 passes in the fourth quarter of the game. Number three, this is probably a team a lot of people will probably put number one, and that's the 1985 Bears. Jim McMahon, Mike Ditka, the Fridge, Willie Gault, that dominating defense. Dan Marino beat him on Monday night and beat him pretty convincingly on that Monday night game. But other than that, it's one of the most stifling defenses of all time. They dominated the playoffs as well. They led the time of possession by almost 10 minutes in every game that season, which is unbelievable. Number four, the 1992 Cowgirls, some of the Cowboys. Emmitt Smith, was made that offense go for North Turner. Dave Wanstead's defense was number one in the league that year. They also upset the 14-2 Niners in the NFC Championship game in San Francisco. They put 52 on those Buffalo Bills in the Super Bowl, and if you all remember the play by Leon Lett, it should have been 59 points in that game. So they dominated the Bills in the Super Bowl. And number five, I'm going with another 49ers team, the 1984 Niners. This team was another 49ers team that flirted with perfection. They went 15-1. Dan Marino had a record-breaking season, and they held him in check in that Super Bowl matchup with a 38-16 win. So those will be my top five teams of all time, well, top five Super Bowl champions of all time.
JQ?
Yeah, no, I'm not going to quibble with it too much. I hate to talk about the 49ers, especially back then. They cost us 2 Super Bowls. They took our offense because we got a dumb owner that wanted to hire Forrest Gregg instead of making Bill Walsh the promote him to from the OC to the head coach. And he goes to San Francisco and takes the West Coast offense they were running in Cincinnati to San Francisco, and you get the San Francisco dynasty. So, yeah, that's where I am with all of that.
JQ, there's a book that.
But a lot of those 49ers teams used to beat up on my Saints, so it's kind of hard for me to put 2 of them up there, too.
They took us out. Yeah, did you ever read that book, JQ, The Score Will Take Care of Itself? Did you ever read that before, JQ?
I have not.
It's a book about the 49ers and not to pour salt in the wound, but yeah, it does talk about, actually talks about, you know, how he got started and, you know, how he was, you know, formulating the offense. And it's literally about Bill Walsh. It's a really good book. And it's interesting because they talk a lot about the Bengals. And he did give a lot of credit, too. Yeah, I know, but I'm just telling you, I know. We got you, bro. So there's a lot of love for the Bengals, in there. I'm just so – he's cutting it up and he's talking about everything, all the good stuff. He never really badmouthed the Bengals, which is pretty interesting. He only badmouthed the Bengals later on, but it's interesting because he's talking about how, you know, he formulated this offense, and the reason why they even went to the West Coast was because I can't think of the quarterback that got hurt, and then I guess his arm was pretty strong, and the other guy wasn't that strong, so he's like, well, let's figure out a way to have these little swing passes and then trying to stretch the field. So all of that led to him coming up with the West Coast offense. Yep, and then the second piece of about it was – they actually were one of the first teams that came up with motion. And it was funny because motion was an accident. I don't know if I told this to you, Rob, because literally they're getting ready to hike the ball. And one of the tight ends, he realized he was on the wrong side of the formation. So he runs automatic to the other side of the formation. And then the defense is going nuts. They're like, you know, they don't know what to do, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, everyone's laughing at it in the huddle. They're like, oh, you suck, you know, whatever. And so Bill Walsh, one of those, he's like, watch what happened. He said, you see what the defense did? No one knew what to do. And that was like by him going an accident in motion, it actually created that motion play, so no one knew how to figure it out. So it was interesting how he figured out that, and you know that was actually an accident that literally created like one of the greatest things, and that's obviously in the modern game now about moving motions and figuring out formations and stuff like that too. So anyway, that was all from working with the Bengals and all that fun stuff, too. So that was kind of long-winded, America, but I was trying to give
Mike Brown,
JQ couple props and a little like that, too, man. But anyway. Wow.
You
got to
get that button ready for JQ, man.
I got to say, prepare. JQ, man, he's on about a couple things from here. All right, let's talk about.
If he have a couple of drinks, he you know, he's going to be liquored up like Mike Vanderjack.
No. Come on, bro. Come on, man.
Mike Vanderjack. What's that dude doing?
All right.
Y'all don't remember that interview about Peyton Manning, right?
Yes, I do.
Got liquored up.
He did, man. Rob, which state in the United States hates the Patriots the most?
I think this one, obviously, I think the Patriots are probably one of the most hated teams in all of sports, but I was going to have to go with New York. I mean, first off, in that state alone, you got two of your division rivals in the Jets and the Bills in one state.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would definitely say, you know, obviously there's this New York-Boston rivalry. You have it in baseball. You have it in football to a little bit lesser scale. But Nick Celtics. I mean, so this is a big – I would say New York obviously will be hands down the state that hates the Patriots the most, even though the Patriots are one of the most hated teams in sports. I would say it's easily New York.
I thought this was based on facts, not about some random thing. But go ahead, bro. Go ahead, JQ.
Oh, no. It's got to be New York for what you just talked about. You talk about the two division rivals who hate the Patriots' guts, and he touched on it. You talk about the Celtics and the Knicks, and for that people in that corridor, you know, in that original eight, the Rangers and the Bruins as well, or original six, I'm sorry, in the NHL. So you got a lot of hate there. And then you flip the script to the Giants, who have beaten the Patriots and gone 2-0 against the Super Bowls against them, that hate them and all the stuff they heard leading into those Super Bowls about how great Tom Brady was and how great that offense was, and they get those wins. So you're talking about the Giants, the Bills, the Jets, and they talk about the Rangers and the Knicks hating everything about Boston. Like, oh, yeah, it's easily New York. There's no other state that you could even put up there with, maybe New Jersey, only because it's so close. You got a lot of that mixture of that New York, New Jersey kind of thing happening. But it's definitely right there. I agree with Rob. It's New York with a bullet.
I can see New York with a bullet. I can also see another state that's kind of like maybe like down. I would also say, you know, maybe California because of the tuck rule in Oakland. So that's a whole new conversation too. But, you know, that's just me kind of adding
some.
With
Tom Brady from San Francisco, though. Tom Brady's from L.A., though.
Yeah,
so he's going.
He's from
that
Bay Area, I believe. Yeah, he grew up a 49ers fan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sorry, he is from San Francisco area. You're right, San Francisco area. So that balances it out. But New York, and you know how New Yorkers are anyway. They have no love for Boston and all that Tom Brady talk. New York is the best thing smoking in a New Yorker's mind, and have to deal with Tom Brady and all that foolishness they hear when they 2-0 against them. Definitely New York, and then you throw in the Jets and the Bills and everybody else we talked about. I hear what you're saying. But you got enough Tom Brady love on the West Coast to where it's not as hated as New York, where there is no love for anything Boston.
I was throwing something fun. But, you know, actually I pulled this up and they were talking about Pittsburgh is number – or excuse me, Pennsylvania is number one, ironically. They've made fools of – the Patriots have made fools of the Steelers for, you know, that rivalry. So that's according to this. This is their number one. Number two is New York, Maryland, Indiana, and the New Jersey kind of top. But yeah, because the Colts rivalry.
Yeah, the Colts Patriots. Yeah, that was a big rivalry too.
Yeah, so, but I think it's funny. But I would think that too, New York too. But yeah, go ahead.
And that poll could be just because they just recently lost to the Patriots too. When
almost
you talk right. about state of Pittsburgh, I mean, that, you know, depending on when that poll was taken, that could have a lot to do with it too.
It's all good.
True.
All right, we're gonna let this keep going here. We're gonna move on to the top. Five best Super Bowl QB matchups ever. And go ahead and kick us off too, Rob.
Let's go back to that 1994 Super Bowl. Super Bowl number 19, Montana-Marino. Montana had a nice year that year, 28 touchdowns, 10 INTs, 102 QB rating. But that season, Marino might have had the best quarterback of any NFL QB in history, over 5,000 yards, 48 touchdowns, And that was before the video game passing numbers you see in the quarterbacks putting up today.
Yeah.
So that was unheard of. So, I mean, I would say even though the Super Bowl was lopsided going into that game, Montana versus Marino, I would say will be number one as far as the greatest QB matchup of all time in the Super Bowl. Number two, I'm going to go to Super Bowl 44, 2009, Breeze versus Peyton Manning. They were top two in the MVP that year. And I would say 2009 wasn't even Breeze and Manning's best seasons, but they were still 1-2 in the MVP. Breeze had a whopping 109 passer rating that season, and both QBs were obviously in the heart and you know their prime that season as well. Super Bowl III, the third one will be this year's Super Bowl. Even though the game hadn't taken place yet, I'm going to go Matt Ryan and Tom Brady. They're obviously the top two candidates for MVP this season as well. So you look at both of them have set records this season. Brady for his TD to INT ratio is an NFL record, and Ryan has set the NFL record for 9.3 yards per completion. That's the most average yards per completion for any NFL quarterback in history. So I would put that as number three, Super Bowl 51 this season. And number four, let's go back to the olden days. Bart Starr playing on that frozen tundra of Landrieu Field. Super Bowl number one. Got to go with Bart Starr versus Lynn Dawson. Two of the best to ever play the game. Their stats may not seem like much compared to the modern day era, but that was a prime matchup, Bart Starr against Lynn Dawson. And number five, Super Bowl 10, Terry Bradshaw versus Roger Staubach, classic. Both quarterbacks was in their peaks during this matchup, and, of course, Staubach was in his peak even at 36 years old during that Super Bowl. So that would be my top five Super Bowls when it comes to quarterback matchups.
We don't get no Boomer in Montana. I'm just playing. Yeah. I'm playing.
Boomer, you side? Come on.
Hey, man, I know. I'm just messing with
Boobie.
You. I believe there's one that I would think about. Didn't Green Bay and Pittsburgh play where we had a Rodgers Roethlisberger Super Bowl matchup? Like in the past?
That's a pretty good one. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'll put that in the top five, but that's still a pretty good one.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it lurks. Like if you put it six or seven, you know, nobody's necessarily going to quibble with it too much because for the top five, you just mentioned that those are pretty similar matchups. But, you know, if you think about it now in terms of contemporary and modern day, a Rodgers Roethlisberger Super Bowl is pretty good. But I agree. I mean, once you start talking about top five, top eight, you know, you really just are splitting hairs about who you what you like best about this person and the other. Like, there's really no wrong answer, so to speak. It was just one that you didn't mention that I thought about. Like, yeah, that's a pretty good one, too. You get Rodgers and Roethlisberger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you can go to Troy Aikman versus Jim Kelly. I mean, there was a lot of really good ones. I mean, there were a lot of good ones historically when you look at a lot of these matchups. And the funny thing is, not one of my top five even had Tom Brady in there.
Mm-hmm. But they haven't had anybody they faced that was another
icon. Except
for
this
year,
unless
you want to put like Kurt Warner.
I did put this year's Super Bowl at number three, so I did have one with Tom Brady. I take that back.
Yeah, and nobody puts Eli up there like that. They know the defense is that, and maybe Kurt Warner. I can't quibble with your top five, though. Those are strong matchups. I mean, the only one I said, like I talked about, and you brought up the other one, Kelly and Aikman's a pretty good one as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Steve McNair versus Kurt Warner the one time with the Rams, that was pretty good, too. But, I mean, like I said, that was a great game, too. Come on, man.
Warner and McNair. Like, I love those guys, but come on, man.
Yeah, they may not even be top 10.
You're right.
That was a good game, bro. That was a good game, man.
Good game.
Talk about
a good quarterback matchup.
Let's talk about. I was trying to just throw something salt in the wound, bro. I was just messing with. Let's talk about the NFC and the AFC title games. They actually scored huge ratings. Let's talk about the AFC game right off the cuff. And your thoughts about that, JQ?
I was really shocked. I was shocked at both of those games. I admit to it. I took the collar. I went with the road teams, and I was 0-2. And I didn't see them playing out the way that they played. And there are things that happened in both games that we could speak to. But the ratings match up for what they want. You talk about the Patriots and the Steelers with two of the biggest fan bases, and then you talk about Green Bay with the great fan base, and then Atlanta with that offense. So they got what they wanted out of the top four teams. I didn't really expect that. I really thought that Pittsburgh could go into New England and win. But if not win, not get destroyed. Like, they got destroyed. And what we've heard from Ben following that game lets us know that things just weren't copacetic in that locker room. And there's a really good point about it as well, that you really haven't heard, given that Todd Haley has, you know, head coaching experience, he's not been on anybody's short list. And maybe that should have given me and other people that thought about it, picking Pittsburgh, more of a pause going into this postseason of how do you have, you know, where Mike Smith gets interviews and, you know, other retreads get interviews, where Todd Haley doesn't get an interview with that offense that he's done good things with for the most part in Pittsburgh. He wasn't really necessarily terrible in Kansas City, just rubbed people the wrong way. But other guys have, like Jim Harbaugh, have gotten head coaching opportunities rubbing people the wrong way as well. So there's something going on that's more funky in that, you know, in that Pittsburgh locker room that doesn't manifest itself until they play another top-notch team. They can get away with those things against teams that are on their level or maybe a little less to them. But when they get somebody a little bit higher than them and then move, you know, more northward, then you find out those things come to present themselves to the surface. So I was just shocked, more or less than anything, at both games in terms of the spread of the defeat for Pittsburgh and for Green Bay and how that went down.
Rob Ford?
Yeah, when you look at that AFC matchup, I agree. I mean, I predicted New England would win the game. I don't know if I predicted it to be that one-sided. And when you look at the rating standpoint, obviously, you know, that was the game that was more in the prime time. It had a slightly better rating than the NFC game. AFC was 27.6. The NFC was 27.4. But the AFC game was down from last year's game. The Denver-New England, Peyton Manning against Brady last year, had a 31.8. So slightly down. But those are still some very strong numbers when you talk about from a rating standpoint in that particular matchup. And you look at the NFC, Atlanta-Green Bay at a 27.4. Now, that's actually up from last year's NFC game, which is a 26.8. Overall, the NFL ratings this season were down compared to last season. But the championship game numbers show that you're pulling 27s in your title games, you're doing extremely well, and I'm sure they'll be pulling a 40-something in the Super Bowl. But, yeah, obviously, I thought both games would have been closer than they would have been. And I did think Atlanta would edge Green Bay, and I kind of thought New England would edge Pittsburgh. But I didn't think they would be as one-sided as they were.
Well, you know what, Rob, you bring up a good point, and I just thought about it when you were talking. Maybe the AFC ratings would have been up more if people had known Goodell was going to be in New England, and you can't discount that fact. People want to see Goodell be on a stage with Brady and Belichick and Kraft and have to talk to them and hand them a trophy after what happened with the Deflategate. No matter what side you fall on that argument and that story, people want to see that. And if he had been in New England for that, I think at least – I don't know how the late game ratings in terms of if you tune into the fourth quarter when you feel like, you know, New England's going to win and Goodell's going to have to go up there and people tune into the set there, how that affects the ratings for the overall broadcast. But I still think that would have boosted a little bit. And then for the NFC, it's more because you have a known quantity with a much bigger following. And no disrespect to the Falcons, but Green Bay has a massive fan base. So you have them in there, but then you have Atlanta.
Even for a small market.
A team. Right. Even exactly. Even though you have Atlanta from a bigger market, but they're not as much of a known quantity nationally as a Green Bay, a Pittsburgh, a New England, a Dallas, you know, a San Francisco, those kind of teams that are just have those big fan bases. So I think that's a piece of it in terms of it being up and down. But I think for sure for the AFC, if Roger Goodell had been in New England and had to hand them that trophy and sit there and take that and whatever they would have said to him on that podium, I mean, I would venture to guess the ratings would have been up maybe at least 5 points from what it was just on that factor alone because people want to see that. We love drama as an American culture. We just do. And that would have been drama at the highest in terms of the NFL.
get you, JQ, to keep on disrespecting my squad, bro. But I'm going to come back around to
it's
this.
Just
so,
true.
Yeah.
It's just
bro,
true.
It's all good. It's all good. You know, there is a gentleman that his name is I think his name is Brian Packer, or his name is Brian something. He wanted to be a Packer for life, so literally he's taken on his bride. Her last name is Packer, so he's actually going to take on his bride's last name too. So that's just how much he loves the Green Bay Packers. So speaking of that too, man, so that's an interesting story. But yeah, it's a lot of love for the Packers. They're a small team, and they have a huge following. So there's a lot of Packer fans here. I will say that spite of it is a sigh of relief because even before, I mean, Aaron Rodgers was a dangerous quarterback, so that this was not an easy game by any means. So we're ecstatic because there's probably a 50-50 shot. You know, we could have still lost or pulled whatever because Aaron Rodgers can make toddlers look good out there. So until the game was 2 minutes to go. That's whenever I'll celebrate him because, that's just how much respect we have for the Green Bay Packers. Shout out to Zach Gable, too, man. Zach's my guy. You know Zach, too, Rob. So, he wasn't talking too much junk, too. But in spite of all that, still, that was a good game. And we remembered whenever the 49ers came back in, and they came back, and even though we were up 17-0, and they still came back and beat us. So we were still kind of like, okay, let's make sure that we take care of business, and we'll go from there, too. So the city's ecstatic because it's a different feel. We're not going to talk about 1998 because that's a whole other conversation. But yeah, it's a good feel, and we feel pretty confident right about now. So right now, we're going to go right on. We've got about 13 minutes left. We're going to talk about the early predictions as we
speak. Please find Eugene Robinson on y'all team.
Uh-oh. Oh, my gosh. You know, see, this joke. See? Then I just said we're not going to talk about that, man. Are you going to sit there and just bring it right back up, Rob, man? Man, this joker right here, bro. All right. I'm going to let JQ go first because Rob is just clearly – showing a lack of disrespect in that freaking post. But, yeah, JQ, I'm going to let you go first.
Hey, that was
kind of curious to hear your
thoughts,
man. It is a fact, bro. But we got to talk about this right now. You just just throwing, like, little digs at me, bro.
It had nothing to do with you. That's just a fact. We are talking sports.
Falcons,
website.
Oh, my gosh. All right, here we go. JQ, what are your thoughts about the early Super Bowl predictions here?
Hey, I predicted your team will win.
That's true. just to back up for a quick
that's
second,
like a
I don't know if you guys saw the
here.
If you saw the GIF of the Atlanta Falcon, the lady in the concourse running down, and there was another lady on the sideline that was a Packers fan that had the cheese head on, and she ran past her and knocked the cheese head off and kept running, and the security guard didn't say anything. That was hilarious. I don't know if you guys have seen it.
If you've seen it,
but you should go look at it. That was really funny. Everybody was just rolling. The chick couldn't even be so mad because they were getting beat. But honestly, I will be in red and black for the next 2 weeks. Hey, listen, I live here. I said it. I was skeptical, and I own up to it. But when you go through a Russell Wilson and then Aaron Rodgers, and in back-to-back playoff games at home, and you do them, you just don't win, but you do them as a team. You know, they have my attention. I don't know if you guys have. I was watching Around the Horn the other day. And they talked about New England having number one ranked defense, but they had not faced, I think, a top 12 quarterback all year long at the end of the year ratings, with your QBR and whatnot. So it's a little skewed to that, that New England defense. I'm going with Atlanta, and I know it's Tom Brady and everything and all that good stuff, but Atlanta has so many weapons. I just feel like they can find a way to win. Unless they have turnovers or something stupid like Green Bay did, I think they find a way to beat New England in a high-scoring, very exciting Super Bowl, which the NFL would love due to Rob's points earlier about the ratings being down.
Yeah, I'm going to let Rob answer, but I'm going to say, too, it's kind of skewed, too, because I think, and I don't know if it could be, Todd Haley, whatever, but that Pittsburgh team was supposedly a pretty good team. So, you do have to respect what the Patriots have been able to do.
Absolutely.
Because that team was a pretty high-scoring team. They do have the number one scoring defense, like you talked about, but it could be a little skewed, like you talked about too, JQ, because of they had kind of a softer schedule, if you will. Like I said, you got to respect them. Belichick is a mastermind. We're going to talk about some of the top combos, if you will, and they've been probably like Belichick and Brady have been probably the tops because they've been together for so long. I can't think of another duo besides unless you're going like basketball or something like that, but. Yeah, it is going to be a tough game to say the least, but I have a healthy respect and a fear for the Patriots too, but I'll let you do your prediction, Rob, from that perspective, Rob. So go ahead, sir.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the coaches in this matchup here. You look at Bill Belichick. He has been involved in 10 out of the last 31 Super Bowls. That's a third of the last 31 Super Bowls. He's either been a head coach or a defensive coordinator. And so, I mean, that is outstanding. But even Dan Quinn, he's been in 3 out of the last 4 Super Bowls. He was defensive coordinator for Seattle on those two teams, and now he's going too. So he, you know, should be familiar with this process as well, being, you know, just in it, you know, 2 years in a row here. So it should be very – I think this is going to be a very intriguing matchup. I know I predict the close matchups in the championship games, and but I think we're definitely going to see a close matchup in this particular football game. I've been going back and forth on a prediction, and my prediction tonight might be totally different from my prediction next week. after the championship games, I really do think we're looking at a really close matchup here, because after the championship games, Sunday night, I was saying it's definitely Atlanta. Tonight, prediction is more going toward New England, and I'm just thinking here, you're giving Bill Belichick a chance to prepare for a team for 2 weeks, and I go back to that 1990 Super Bowl when the Giants were clearly the underdog to the Buffalo Bills in that high-powered offense, and I don't think the Patriots are a clear underdog in this game, but they were a clear underdog to the Bills in 1990. And the Bills had an extremely potent offense, and Belichick came up with a defense scheme. And I don't know if you remember that game, but basically Belichick's plan was, hey, we're just going to rush 2 down linemen the entire game, and we're just going to keep that offense in front of us, and we're going to just make them force them to kick field goals. And one of the most phenomenal game plans I've ever seen. The Giants still barely won the game. The Bills missed the field goal. Scott Norwood, you know, missed the field goal that would have won the game. But I just think, I mean, as of tonight, I'm going to say the Patriots in a close one. I just think you give Belichick 2 weeks to prepare. He's going to come up with some kind of scheme to not stop the Falcons' offense, but slow them down enough. The Patriots are going to put up some points. And in order to beat the Falcons, you have to put up points. And I think I still think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I just think the Patriots will score just a little bit more. So I'm going to go 34-31 New England right now.
Gotcha. Good call. I mean, like I said, it's I can respect that too, because it's definitely, you know, I'm not overconfident by any means, because, you know, you talk about definite statistics that talk about the number one scoring offenses have lost, if you will, the past like 5. They're like 6-1 or something crazy like that. If I'm off,
1-6.
You know, definitely, yeah, something crazy like that. Yeah, I was trying to flip that script. Yeah, but so basically, yeah, putting offenses have been stopped because the defense. You know, they say defense wins championships. So, you know, that's something you got to look at too. So, you know, good stats. I mean, I agree with you. It's going to be an interesting matchup. You know, the good news is that you want to see how the Patriots have reacted to the past game plan versus Seattle, and it's been an interesting game. You know, we all know what happened 2 years ago whenever everyone in the stadium knew that Marshawn should have got the ball, so they decided to pass it. But, you know, a couple things that you got to take a look at that too as far as history. But it's going to be a nice chess match. It's going to be a great, great game. And, I'm pulling for my Falcons to pull it out too, so hopefully it'll be good.
Listen,
I won't say that too. But
listen,
I'm
trying to be cool.
Game whatsoever. But no, I respect that. No, I mean, obviously, you know, everything has been gravy at this juncture, because in year two we never would have expected this. And I still harken back to Rob's boy, to Heath Evans, how he predicted the Falcons to go 5-11, and that dude is eating so much crow, man. It's insane. But you know, one of the conversations that we'll come back to that
like
later too. So.
You get a Super Bowl with Dan Quinn. Then if he go, and then if he have like 3 straight 8-8 and 7-9 seasons, you're gonna be talking about firing him. Like, come on, man, you can't fire that guy.
I really hope not. Thanks for pulling that out, JQ. I appreciate that. No, but there's nowhere to go but up too. And hope, like I said, I think it's definitely definitely above schedule too. So we just hope that we're going to continually do well. And I'm just happy that Matt Ryan's getting his love and stuff like that too, man. So it's early and we got a different feel too. Some of the cats, they're too young to even realize what's happening. But a lot of love, man. Got to love seeing the Deion Jones, the LSU boys, and Jalen Collins is playing well too, Rob. So that's some good stuff as well, man. So it's been a good season so far. So yeah, we're trying to buck all these trends that we see, all these statistics about offenses, and Tom Brady has always beat the Falcons. And so yeah, we'll see how that plays out too. So we got 2 weeks to figure this out. All right,
yeah,
LSU
still got the most
there.
Players in the NFL, but Les Miles didn't know what to do with them when they were in college.
There we go.
All right. We'll let Rob have that moment. All right. So
y'all know
about,
it's true.
We do know it. We just letting you kind of have your moment, bro.
Yeah,
right. Let's talk about really quickly. I guess we're going to change gears too. Talking about Ryan Howard. Still wants one more World Series title. I know it's not with the Phillies, for sure. Rob, what are your thoughts about this?
Well, you know what's funny? The Phillies basically had a ceremony for him like he was retiring. But, Ryan, he said he's working as hard than he ever is. He's 37 years old. He's played 13 years in the league. I think his best shot is going to have to go with an American League team as a contender, possibly a DH. Obviously, at this stage in his career, he's not going to be able to play every day, but he can still hit against right-handed pitching. So I think if there's a contending team in the American League, you can take a shot on Ryan Howard. I mean, he still wants to play. He said he's working out extremely hard. He's getting in really tip-top shape. But at this stage of his career, he could probably still go in and help a team at the DH position or as a pinch hitter. Like I said, obviously he's not going to be able to play every day. But in American League, you can definitely go in and still be a DH.
Your thoughts, JQ?
Yeah, but I think he's done. I do. I agree with you. His best shot is not to play every day. He's not a everyday first baseman anymore. He's just not. And, Father Time is undefeated. So that's what it is for him in terms of playing first base. But I think the book is out on him like it was kind of like Paul O'Neill back in the day, where if you work him outside and then you work that breaking ball to the back foot, where you don't let him get that big aggressive swing on the fastball, but you break him down and in, and you counterbalance that with, being on the outside part of the plate, you can strike him out. I think Ryan Howard is done. He had a fantastic ride, and there's no doubt in his ride that got them that World Series, but they were in the playoffs, I believe, 3-4 years in a row with one title. Him and Utley and Rollins, they were a fantastic team, but it's just over for him, I think, unless he gets on with a Cubs or the Indians where anything he gives them is gravy, but he's really giving them, like, veteran leadership in the clubhouse, but not a whole lot of on-field thing, kind of like a David Ross, where you get a couple of timely at-bats and get some hits, but we're not asking you to do that from game one to game 162. He's going to have that kind of situation. But being relied on to be an everyday contributor, it's just not going to happen for him.
Look at look
by
at
the way, I am beating
pull.
All the time. I still feel like I'm 18 years old, by the way.
Okay, Benjamin.
Benjamin Button over here. I love it. Good call, and I appreciate the in-depth analysis about very, very
productive.
Like
that ball. I know you do.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That was pretty cool. All right, Rob, we got a minute 30 seconds. Go ahead and get ready to wrap up the show, sir.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be back on the air on next week. We're looking at Tuesday night of next week as of now, but stay tuned just in case we have any changes. 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central for our friends in Hawaii. Aloha. We're going to be coming on to you at 5 p.m. Hawaiian time. And for our listeners in Germany, that's going to be Wednesday morning at 5 a.m. Make sure you set your alarms. Get up, listen, talk some sports, catch up on what's happening in American sports, people. Good night. We'll catch up with you next week.
Thank
you.
San Diego. Oh, I can't do that anymore. Well, stay classy, San Diego.
Yeah, Los Angeles.
No
Supercharged.
That's terrible. That's terrible.
And they're going to be playing the 30,000 stadium, 30,000-seat stadium. Wow.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. That's like some, like, Northwestern Idaho State kind of stuff. That's ridiculous.
That's like
a
high school state championship stadium.
In a bad state. Like, that's not Texas going to get more than that. Like, that's not even a good high school in a good state. It's awful. Appreciate you, everybody. Yeah.
Good night, folks. We got 15 more minutes. We'll keep it going, too. Good night, people.
Oh, man.
I love it. Oh, my gosh. I love it. We're still talking baseball here. So, good call, guys. And Dean, you know, Dean Spanos is almost the second hated person in America, but we'll talk about it a little later on. But let's talk about the top five offseason moves in Major League Baseball. So do you want to talk about this, JQ, or should I kick it to Rob here? I'm kind of curious your thoughts here.
Well, I mean, I got a couple that I thought about that I kind of put together that weren't necessarily moves that were put in the same kind of move, right, but for the teams involved.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, I think it's got to be Sale going to Boston. I think that's just a game changer. Every time you can get a lockdown ace to go to a team with that kind of hitting prowess, and you put in with a Porcello and a Price, you know, I think it allows Price to go back to a three. But if you got a solid three, I think, which Price is, that's a big move for them. The Mets keeping Cespedes, I think, is big, and Jay Bruce. You know, those are two separate kind of transactions. But with the pitching staff they have, they can just get any kind of timely hitting to augment that pitching staff. They're gonna find themselves in the midst of it, because if we want to be honest, that NL East is not a murderer's row, so to speak. Then you go to the Dodgers. You know, keeping Hill and Hanson, in-house, because if you think about it, they were there playing against the Cubs, and they were in all of those games. I mean, they lost, but they didn't get thumped where you're like, oh, God, the Dodgers are just out of it, so they don't have a chance. So I think that's a big move for them. The Cubs getting Wade Davis from Kansas City is a very big move, and the fact that they lost Chapman to the Yankees. But you keep that bullpen solidified, and you give the ability to mix and match like you showed down the stretch, especially against Cleveland in that World Series. So that's very big for the Cubs as well. I mean, Wade Davis is not Chapman. Nobody is Chapman. But Wade Davis is still pretty darn good. And he may only be there a year or two, but this is your window now. And when I talk about it, they got Wrigley money. Everybody chews gum. They can find them another closer if they're willing to spend the money to go get them. And a real kind of, you know, not under the radar, but if you look at the Yankees getting, where they already have the youth movement going, you got to give Cashman a lot of credit. But going and getting Chapman back, and they're getting Holiday to put in that lineup, they may be sneaky. And we all talk about Boston with Sale, and rightfully so. But you got two wild cards now, and that might be where the Yankees are right this second. We may not be the, you know, overwhelming Jeter Rivera kind of Yankees team, but we're going to be good enough to be in the mix and get people fits. And when you can close down that ninth inning the way they can with Chapman now, and you get Holiday, who's a proven veteran, in the middle of that lineup, that's a big boost to that Yankees lineup. So those are just the moves I've been looking at here in the offseason for, you know, those teams that feel like they're in the running to chase that ring and get that championship, to get it from the Cubs, that have done things to help themselves to at least make sure they solidify themselves a postseason roster. Not necessarily winning their division, but solidify themselves a postseason roster to at least put their, you know, their name and contention to get a ring.
Go ahead, Rob.
Well, yeah, JQ talked about three of my five. Obviously, we talked about it on the previous show with the Red Sox getting Chris Sale. Obviously, they're going to lose David Ortiz, so you may lose some bat in the lineup. But they offset that. We're going to help out with some pitching and some defense, getting Chris Sales. I have that as number one. Number two, the Indians getting Edwin Encarnacion. Everybody thought the Indians were going to bring back Mike Napoli, but obviously they shocked the baseball world by bringing in Encarnacion, and also joined the stacked lineup. They also going to get Michael Brantley back this coming season, so they should have a pretty good lineup along with stellar rotation and bullpen. So the Indians should be still right back in the running this coming season as well. JQ talked about the Mets bringing back Yonis Cespedes, so obviously that's a big move. And if the Mets are healthy, if their pitching staff is healthy, they'll have one of the best in the league this season as well. So they get that big bat back in the lineup. The Cardinals are getting Dexter Fowler. I mean, basically what they needed is a leadoff hitter, center fielder, somebody with some bring some charismatic personality to the clubhouse. They got it all three in one signing right there. We're getting right. Dexter Fowler to the team. And as JQ already mentioned, the Cubs bringing in Wade Davis. 1.118 ERA. He's got 47 saves over the past three seasons. Obviously, they lose Chapman, but he got a guy waiting in the wings, Hector Rondon, who didn't have to break the bank on. You know, somebody that's already on the roster. And basically all I had to do was give up Jorge Soler to get Wade Davis. So that was another strong move as well.
Mm-hmm. Soler is a big bat. Soler is gonna be a dude. That's a big give up, but I understand why the Cubs would do it. They're in win now mode. So,
do you think this is for both of you guys? Do you think that the Red Sox gave up too much to get Sale, or was that just enough? Or what do you think about that move? And you can start with that, JQ. Your thoughts about that, and I'll take it for you, Ron.
They're another team that in a big market where they can spend that kind of money, that I think they're in a win now kind of mode. You got the Killer Bees, you got Pedroia. Yeah, you lose Ortiz like Rob talked about, but the thing is, you may give up a run per game, but if you save a run per game by bringing in a Sale and letting Porcello and Price go back to a 2-3 slot as opposed to being the 1-2s, think about you rolling to Boston on an arbitrary freaking May, you know, May 21st through the 23rd or whatever. And you get freaking Price and Porcello and Chris Sale. Like, you might score two runs in 3 days. Like, you can't underestimate running into a team, and even a good team, but especially an overmatched team. Like, if you go to, like, play the Twins or somebody like that, that's a sweep. And going 2-1 and only picking up one game versus going 3-0 and picking up three games, especially the way baseball works, is huge when you can multiply that, five, 7 times a year. You're talking about, you know, going 21-0 versus going 14-7. You know what I mean? Those are 7 games, and we come down to September where we have these races where it's 2, 3, maybe 4 games for the division lead, and you look back at it like, yeah, we rolled into City A, B, C, and D with these three guys, and we just wiped them clean off the mat. You know what I mean? Because those three guys are money. In a series where you face the other teams 1, 2, 3, or maybe because of off days, you face the other teams 3, 4, 5, and you roll out that 1, 2, 3, that's a sweep. And you can't discount that over the course of a season when you look up and like, well, they won by 8 games, and you look back over those, you know, Friday through Sundays or Tuesday through Thursday series where they rolled out those three guys and they just murdered people. So it's huge for Boston. And I talked about it before, and I'll let you go to Rob, is that you can't value potential over production. This guy has shown you. He's crazy. Don't get me wrong. You can't cut the uniforms. But he's shown you the production. Those other two guys are showing you production. And I know Price has been faulty, and I talked about it in the postseason. But over the regular season with those three guys over 162, that's you just can't discount the fact that what that does when you walk into somebody else's building or they come to your building and they know they got those three guys over a set, and it changes their whole mindset of how they approach how they play the game for those three games.
Go ahead, Rob.
Well, I mean, just to piggyback off of what JQ said, obviously the way baseball works is, hey, when you got a shot, you got to go ahead and take it. Especially when you're talking about an organization like the Red Sox, Yankees, Dodgers, where they have unlimited ability to spend money. So you can afford to overpay or give up too much for a particular trade just to get you over the hump, because you can still go out and buy the best players on the market. So you got to go ahead and take these chances when you, especially a team like that, they have unlimited resources to be able to go get the players that they want. I hate the Red Sox with a passion. They're probably right behind the Falcons as far as teams I hate the most in sports. But, you know, so obviously
we don't
hoping
like
it
we
don't
like
work
either,
for
Rob.
So I'm hoping it doesn't work for them, but obviously in their position, this is a move that they have to make.
Yeah, just think about that.
All right, gentlemen.
That's a ridiculous 1-2-3. Porcello is the AL, I believe he's the reigning AL Cy Young winner. And, oh, you give him Chris Sale, and he's probably going to take his spot and make him the number 2 on the staff. And then you bring David Price in as your number 3. just think about that and the pressure it takes off the 4 and 5 in that lineup of we don't have to go out and score 6 runs a game. 3 runs, 2 runs are probably going to be good in 3 of every 5 starts that we get if everybody stays healthy. It alleviates so much pressure off the rest of the team that you just can't put that into words of what that does for that lineup, as good as it is.
Good call, gentlemen. All right, we got 6 minutes here. Let's finish this strong. Let's talk briefly about some NBA here in that the Cavs and rumors about Dwayne Wade. What do you think about this? Go ahead, Rob. Talk about this real quick, Rob.
I still think it's going to be kind of hard to pull off, but I can tell you LeBron James is trying to put pressure on that front office to try to make a move. I know there was a reported talk between the Knicks and the Cavs between a straight-up Carmelo Anthony for a Kevin Love trade. And I think Cleveland did the right thing by denying that trade, rejecting that trade. So, I obviously that was the right decision on that part. But I think it's just going to be so hard cap-wise to be able to squeeze Dwayne Wade's contract on that team without giving up somebody of value. So that's going to be really hard. And I'm not even sure Dwayne Wade is what that team needs. I really think they need somebody that can really knock down a long ball. And they need shooters on that team. In my opinion, it's really going to help them get over the hump. Because Tristan Thompson is going to be a mad dog in the paint come playoff time. I mean, he's going to grab every loose ball, every rebound. Come playoff time, he's going to be a beast down there in the post. And Kyrie Irving and LeBron will be able to get to the paint at will. They're going to need guys that they can kick the ball out to that can knock down open threes. And that's what's going to help them to get over hump. And I know Korver just hasn't meshed with them just yet, but I still think they need more guys like that. Carmelo could help them, but I wouldn't give up Love.
No, he could. No, he's not going to help him. That dude is just a ball hog. All right, 4 minutes.
He's a ball stop.
Ball stop. Yep,
yeah, he's a ball stop. And the thing about it is that's just so crazy now in 2017 that we wouldn't trade Kevin Love for Carmelo Anthony given what we know in our growing up in basketball about Carmelo Anthony. That's just how far his stock has fallen. I would go counter of what Rob just said, and I think that he would help because there's nobody else on the Cavs roster that averages more than 2 assists a game except for Kyrie and LeBron James. If you look at it from Chicago's point of view, Wade signed a 2-year deal, and the second year, though, is a player option. So he could walk away after this year, and they get nothing.
Yeah.
So if you're Chicago, let's get something as opposed to getting nothing. If Dwayne Wade is open to being the leader of the bench mob and getting those guys to play where Kyrie and LeBron don't have to play 41, 42 minutes a game, I think that does help them. They have shooters, and I know what you said about Korver, and he hasn't meshed yet, but it's not like plugging a second baseman into a baseball lineup, right? You have to find where a dude likes to be on the court, what kind of sets he likes to run. That takes time, and you can't judge that trade in the vacuum of a couple of weeks. You're going to have to judge that over the course of the rest of this regular season and head into the playoffs. So I think that Wade could help them, and I don't think it would cost them that much money. I think that's a much easier get than what having to give up a Kevin Love for a Carmelo as it is to get a Wade who is basically – he's basically on an expiring contract. He has all the cards.
Very succinctly put, man. I like that. Good job. Good job on that, JQ. 2 minutes here. Let's go ahead and wrap this up, the show, man. It's been a crazy show. We've had a lot of fun. Let's get prepared to wrap up and head into the Super Bowl. So go ahead, Rob, wrap this up, man.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be back on the air next week. Right now we're looking at Tuesday night, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific. You don't want to miss us. We'll be just a few days away from the Super Bowl, getting into next week. I'm actually going to be reporting to live from Houston, the site of the Super Bowl.
Uh-oh.
So I'll be on the ground for you, representing the 12th man, talking sports with the 12th man, so you don't want to miss us on next week. Obviously, we'll get you updated on whatever else is happening on the sports world, but obviously we know the big ticket is the Super Bowl. So we'll definitely be getting you all the information, getting you ready for the big game.
I'm coming down, Rob. Talk to you soon. Go ahead, JQ.
All right, he ain't going nowhere. You know that's a lie. The fantasy shout-outs, I was just going to throw it in there. Rob is still kicking our butt. Rob is still kicking our butt, and he kicked Dre's butt. 8-0 win. I think that's the biggest win, if I'm not mistaken. Come on, Dre.
Right,
yeah.
Do better.
There was 3 8-0 wins last week, actually, too.
Yeah, you do better.
I was trying to get out of fantasy shout-out this week, man. You know, appreciate that, man. You know, Hey, man,
normally he brings it up before the live portion, but you notice he didn't do that tonight, right, JQ?
I sure didn't.
Well,
I'm
going to bring it up because he's hurting me. He's hurting my pursuit of first place with that foolishness. I was 6-2 and lost 2 games because you didn't show up this week, Dre.
No,
dope.
So, you know what? Hey. I rose up, but I got to pump the hat because I'm over there like, there's a button that says set active play. I'm like, cool, I got to do this, set it every day. I was setting it, and I was like, wait a minute. How come I'm getting – it was setting my injured players in there. So that was kind of upsetting on my part too. So anyway,
when the Falcons are winning, he's not effective at nothing else. So you should have known that already.
I had to throw that out there because you hurt me deep. Come on, Saints Pelicans, I need you to get it together and do something so somebody else can be in first place for just at least a week.
Saints Pelicans, right on from New Orleans. His team, he also had an 8-0 win last week, too.
Good night, folks.
Uh-huh. And,